So I'm Pranav. I recently finished my PhD in computer science at UMBC. So what I'll be talking about today will be mostly sampling of the projects in the social media area at UMBC and our group. Okay. Before I start, I just want to get a general feel of the audience, and you know, so I'll just ask a small set of questions, just to understand how much you are into social media and just general social media. So how many of you know about or follow TechMeme? How many of you do? TechMeme? How many of you know about TechMeme?
TechMeme?
Meme.
No.
No one knows about TechMeme. Yeah, I guess many of you know about Flickr.
Yes.
Obviously. Yeah, because the last place I presented this, TechMeme, everyone went up. TechMeme is this news aggregator, blog aggregator, which just, you know, picks up conversations from the bloggers here and displays them. It's more like Dig. Dig, how many of you know about Dig?
About what?
Dig.
Oh, Dig.
Okay. Okay, anyway, so how many of you know about Twitter?
What's it called?
Twitter. Who knows about Twitter? I have a job. Okay. So most of this work is collaboration with my advisor Tim Finan, my colleague there who's currently a PhD student there still, and you know, a host of other organizations. Okay. Okay. Social media. Okay. This is the current definition of social media on Wikipedia. Social media describes the online technologies and practices that people use to share opinions, insights, experiences, and perspectives with each other. How many of you agree with this definition? How many of you don't agree with this definition? How many of you have nothing to say about it? Okay, so if you look at this definition, social media, you just replace this by the web, just say web describes the, totally applies. So how is it different? Okay. So this Wikipedia definition of 2006 changed in 2007 again on Wikipedia, and an important key differentiation, which is and engage with each other.
Hence social.
So if you look at the web, the way it was before social media, before Web 2.0, the way it was you had content online on the web, but you had more of the engagement and conversations offline. Okay. Now what social media enabled in the past 2 or 3 years was to actually capture these conversations also online. Okay. That's what it really gave us. So the way you look at social media now would be something like engagement protocols defined by platforms. So this is the way it kind of separates itself from the web in general. Okay. It's engagement protocols defined by platforms around certain content types, instantiated by certain applications. You see many of these popular applications. LiveSpaces is, of course, the blogging host, enabling online communities. Okay, so that's another way of looking at social media. Okay. So let me give you a quick. Some of this was actually touched upon by Raghu as well yesterday, but I'll just give you a quick stat on where we stand when it comes to social media content. Okay, 55% of American youth. Between 12 and 17 use online, which is really huge. Okay. I am now at Yahoo, and I see that 55% of the employees there are on Facebook. How many of you are on Facebook? Okay. Yeah, it's around 30% maybe in what we have here. If you look at content in general, Andrew Tompkins, how many of you are aware of ICWSM, International Conference on Weblogs? Okay, so the first ICWSM conference happened in 2007, and it came out of 2 or 3 workshops which had happened before that for 2 or 3 years, and then we had ICWSM conference last year, which had a very good audience, not a lot. Okay, this was in Colorado, but what I'm saying is that Andrew Tompkins gave a keynote speech there, and in that what he really separated out was professional content, the way we were seeing it in the web 3 or 4 years back, as opposed to user-generated content, personal content, and what this new user-generated content, what it provides us, okay, and things like that is what he, so this again is social media, of course, and he also pointed out how the amount of social media content, without songs and media, videos, of course, is twice as much as general web content when it comes to content generated every day. Still, there aren't many users clicking at this content, using this content, because just because it's quite noisy. Social media content, the way you take it right away, is quite noisy. Moving on, what I'll do is, because no one is aware of ICWSM, and so we did a simple experiment, or you know, this is something that we did a few days back, just to see ICWSM in some sense, it encapsulates, or it the community behind ICWSM is the community which is working on social media when it comes to computer science researchers. Okay, there is a big group of social media researchers in computer science who are actually actively in the ICWSM. So what I'll do is, I'll compare ICWSM and papers published in ICWSM with papers published in World Wide Web to show you what separates out this community from World Wide Web. Just to give you an idea of, if you're looking at certain kind of research and work, where should you look at? Okay. So this is what I did. What I did was, I picked up papers from the social media conferences in the past 3 years. I picked up paper titles from the social media conference for the past 3 years. I picked up paper titles from the World Wide Web conference in 2007. And I did a simple log likelihood measure just to look at what are the indicative terms when you look at paper titles in the social media conferences and paper titles in the World Wide Web conference. Okay. If you clearly look at the past 3 years, 2004, 2005, and 2006, what you'll see, I should use the other one. What you'll see is that communities and blogs kind of emerge out in the social media side of things. Okay? When you look at the web side of things, semantic web, ontologies, database, services. So what you clearly see is that there is a specific kind of sub area which the social media community is specifically addressing right now in computer science. Moving on, so this was 2004, 2005, and 2006. Moving on, as you move towards 2007, you see that certain other new areas are also emerging out when it comes to research done by the social media community, including visualization of this. How many of you have looked at past literature in sentiment detection, blog sentiment detection? Certain specific areas like social kind of emerge out. So what I'm pointing to here is that there is a sub-community. If you are looking, want to look at papers in social media side of things, there is a sub-community around ICWSM, International Conference on Weblogs and Social Media, where you can really look at some of the work which is happening in the social media side of things right now. And it will give you better ideas on what's happening, as opposed to the World Wide Web. Okay, moving on, the other thing we also did was picking up all the authors from the social media papers and picking up all the authors from the World Wide Web papers. We just did a Yahoo search of all these authors and picked up the domains that come out in the search results. Okay, just to see where do authors in these two conferences, where do they stand, where do they come from. Okay, again, indicative terms show where they actually come from. Of course, this also emerged as one of the highest ones because we have been publishing quite a lot in ICWSM and other kind of things. When it comes to the web, you see that a lot of other research institutions as well as some of the top institutes are yet to look at the social media side of things when it comes to the social media community in computer science. Okay. So there is a lot to be done there. That's what I'm pointing to here. So next what I'll do is I'll talk about a sampling. I'll just give an overview of these projects, but I'll talk about a few of these projects that we have done at UMBC. The primary message that I want to convey is what actually Raghu also tried to convey yesterday, is that there are these global properties which emerge out of a lot of these social networks and social media content, and we need to better exploit it. Okay? So in some of these projects, we are trying to better exploit it. Okay? So the first project is on modeling bias through link polarity. Before I go, so the sampling of these projects are, how many of you have blogged in the past or are currently blogging? So that's a small number as well. That's okay. So the sampling of these projects is, previously the social media community was mainly looking at social media research as blog research. Okay, it was all centered around blogs and more blogs and blogs. Okay, because that started as one of these early applications around social media. Okay, but what I'll do here is I'll try to sample. We have multiple projects in a group. I'll try to sample projects which are a combination of blogs as well as other social media domains. Okay, let's look at modeling bias through link polarity. What do I mean here? When you look at blogs and conversations from bloggers here, this is how most of the conversations look like. This is from one of the political blogs talking about another political blog. Okay, what you see in blue with underlined are links. Okay, but what you see here is that a specific context in another blog, a specific domain is being discussed, and it's highly argumentative as to there is an opinion around this link which can be exploited in a way. Okay, so there's a link pointing to another blog and there's an opinion around this link. Can you exploit it in some way in this graph structure of the blogosphere? Okay, that's what we try to exploit here. So what I really mean is that blog posts are unedited and can we exploit this opinion? Okay, so what we did here was represent the opinion of the source blog about the destination blog by analyzing a window of text around this hyperlink. We just used -1 to +1 as the range. So, I won't go into the details of how we came up with these numbers for either -1 or +1 or what number we came up with. But I'll just give you the final result to show you what came up with. Okay. And finally, just as you have the link graph for the web, we have a belief matrix. Just as we have a transition matrix, we had a belief matrix around links between blogs, okay, and opinions around blogs. So the range was -1 to +1. So what we get out of this is we get a sort of trust matrix on the blogosphere. That's what we get out of it. Okay. So how is it helpful? This just gives you a specific three or four examples of how a trust matrix can be helpful. Assume that a blog A trusts blog B, and blog B a direct kind of there are different ways you can propagate trust between blogs. Even though a specific blog does not talk about another specific blog. Okay? These specific ways of propagating trust between two different blogs on a blog graph, has been not just blog graph, but general web graph has also been formally looked at from a framework perspective itself. Argo has done it about 3 or 4 years back. So what we did was we adopted this work just to look at how can we propagate trust in a trust graph on the blogosphere, and how can we exploit it to do something interesting with blogs. Okay, I won't go into the details of how trust is propagated, but what I want to point here is we use this framework and we did a simple experiment. What we did was we picked up the blogosphere and the blog graph. We picked up news stories and traditional mainstream media pointed to by these blogs. Okay, now what we have from the blogosphere as well as the traditional mainstream media, we have a trust matrix. We have a blog graph with a trust matrix, and we have ways of propagating this trust. We also had labeled samples of blogs, which were whether these blogs are right-leaning or left-leaning. We wanted to figure out which mainstream media sites are potentially right or left-leaning. Okay. That was the main aim of this entire exercise. And what we came up was this, after doing the trust propagation, we came up with a set of left-leaning as well as right-leaning mainstream media sites. Of course, Google News is an aggregator. There are one or two aggregators here. But the results were quite interesting and hinted to us that this area of work itself is interesting to explore further. Okay. LA Times, I don't know. Is anyone local from here? Yeah?
Sort of, not really
left,
but it's like,
okay.
It's often put together with the New York Times and the Washington Post.
Okay. So this was the first set of results when it comes to identifying left and right leaning blocks. Okay. Again, the details of this is in a specific publication. Just go to our website, you'll find it. Okay. Or just talk to me. So the next set that I'll talk about is microblogs. So when I mentioned Twitter, I mentioned something about microblogs. No one has come across Twitter. Has anyone come across Twitter? No one has come across Twitter. Okay. So Twitter is just as you have blogging, you have microblogging, which is snippets of posts that you make. Okay. For instance, here, you know, what microblogs is and what Twitter is a specific application of microblogs is what it says there. It's a global community of friends and strangers answering one simple question. What are you doing? Okay. That's all you do, okay, on this. For instance, DC Talk says she's enjoying her ice latte, or someone else says she's doing something else. Okay, it's in multiple languages, as you see. I don't know what these say, but they do say something. okay, so Twitter is one of these microblogs, okay, one of the applications of microblog. So it's a quicker way of saying what you're doing right now, okay, and sharing it with your friends. Let me just show you a Twitter, my own Twitter page. Okay. What I'm saying is, when I actually came into UCLA yesterday, I just said I'm in love with UCLA campus. Okay. And I also said I'm in LA. Okay. And I also said I'm smiling. I don't see Karen's baby now, but I also said I'm smiling at a super cute baby. Okay. And I'm now saying, actually, I was saying this a little bit earlier yesterday. That I'm speaking to an intellectually engaging audience at IPA. Okay, so you can say absolutely anything on Twitter, but what you're saying is that you're doing something right now, and you want to share it with your friends and set of followers on Twitter. Okay, so why do people use Twitter? You know, there are, again, as Raghu pointed out, why do people push content into these social networking sites? No, it's an unanswered question in many ways, but you can at least try to speculate why they're doing it. So one speculation is, you know, something called ambient intimacy, which is about being able to keep in touch with people with a level of regularity and intimacy that you wouldn't usually have access to because time and space conspire to make it important. This is one explanation. Valid, invalid, I don't know. Okay. So just to look at some amount of network statistics on Twitter itself. Twitter, of course, has been around for around, I think, more than a year now. It's really popular now. Okay. Again, the reason I brought up TechMeme and other websites was that it's all among this small subset of users who are early adopters who really explore these websites and figure out what's interesting about them. Okay. Okay. So when it comes to Twitter, again, this is a chart. On the x-axis, you see IndieFree. How many follow you? Again, this is the social network with, you know, people saying what they're doing. How many people follow you, and the out degree is how many people you follow. Or rather, So what you see here is that, you know, a really dense structure here shows that it's a highly reciprocal network as well. As is many other social networks too. Okay. But here, this was worked by one of my colleagues. But as you see here, reciprocity, as you see in general blogs, where there are linkage patterns between two blogs, is not that high, as opposed to this, where it's quite high, the reciprocity quotient. Okay. So what it points to is that this is, again, one of those highly reciprocal social networks. You connect to someone, they connect back to you, and, you know, that's how these networks emerge. Okay. So just to give you an idea of how big is Twitter, we actually have tools which actually explore these. TwitterMint is one such tool. What you see is how has Twitter as a twittering tool, saying what you're doing tool, is being adopted around the world. It's US, quite a lot of adoption, but you see that it has quite widespread adoption. Okay. Twitter is being used by quite a lot of people, including, you know, where all it's used. LA stands at 5, which is quite neat. Okay. So in terms of number of tweets per day, this was sometime around, I think around 6 or 7 months back. There are around 200,000 people saying what they are doing right now, okay, every day, including number of tweets per hour. So it's being adopted quite fast, and, you know, I think now it's, I don't know, have the numbers right off it right now, but it's been seeing growth all the while.
Say openly, when like other cultures, you know, they're more reserved.
Actually, I know for a fact that there are studies which look at it from the, you know, sociology kind of perspective, but I am not aware of that. I think Indiana University has some work on it as well. I think. Okay. So in terms of Quitament, you can do a lot of other aggregate analysis. How many of you know about BlockPulse?
Yeah.
BlockPulse. Okay. So BlockPulse is this trend miner which sees what are the number of occurrences of a specific word at a specific time of the day. Okay. For instance, this so Quitament is. And these bus charts are very similar to BlockPulse bus chart. Let me tell you exactly what I'm saying here. Okay. So if you look at plots of occurrences of lunch versus dinner on Twitter, saying people saying, I'm having lunch, I'm having dinner. You know, the quite obvious thing, obviously you see that lunch peaks during lunchtime, dinner peaks during. No, quite obvious. The x-axis shows the hour of the day and, you know, percent of all tweets, how many tweets. Okay. But if you look at lunch and dinner, people really look forward to lunch during their work week. People look forward to dinner during the weekend, okay? Which is quite natural here, if you look at this. If you look at more hourly trends, work is almost always analogous with coffee, okay? You talk about work, you talk about, you know, coffee goes with work, okay? And if you look at certain restaurants that you could go to, Chipotle is usually preferred when it comes to lunch. Panera is preferred when it comes to lunch as well as dinner. Okay. So these are certain, what I'm hinting at here is that there are a lot of things. Again, bus charts have been around for a while. When it comes to Twitter as well, you can actually explore these. And it's being used in a lot of ways when it comes to buzz analysis and seeing what correlates with what and what can we do with it. Including, some of you said you've looked at work on sentiment detection. You can also look at Chipotle and Panera and text around it and say, why are people talking about it? What do they feel nice about it, and so on. So it can be used for a lot of market research when it comes to, you know, buzz analysis. Okay.
Sorry, before you move to the next one. So is that data like available through the site itself, like through some sort of API, or are you sort of
We started off doing it somehow, okay, but then they have it as an API.
But can you query the past, or you
cannot query
the
past. The API is just for the present.
Okay.
A feed of all the current life. Okay. So the next project that I'll talk about, because our group is very much in the AI semantic web side, I'll also talk about one of the projects which we explored from the AI semantic web side of things. Social media and the semantic web. So semantic web, as even this is something that Raghu said yesterday. Semantic web, when it comes to semantic web, how many of you have worked on the semantic web or parts of the semantic web in the past? Okay. Data is a big issue. When it comes to semantic web, structured data is a really, really big issue. And I come from a background where our group has made some really good contributions when it comes to just analyzing structured data on the web. One of it is the search engine Swoogle, which we created 3 or 4 years back, which is still running, which actually indexes the semantic web. Okay. So we understand to a large extent a lot of practical requirements when it comes to semantic web and what is missing there. Okay. And we also understand what are the strengths of social media, what are the strengths of user-generated content. Okay. There is a lot of self-driven incentive to some extent to just push content onto the web, okay, when it comes to social media. So what we are trying to explore here is, can we leverage both of them together, you know, to do something more interesting? So we did it more in the context of a project that we are working. This was a collaborative project with many other universities. What we are trying to do here is to explore the implications of invasive species in a new environment. Okay. So what exactly do I mean by this, invasive species? You see a new fish in a lake in California, and it hasn't been seen there before. Okay. So what you're really doing, looking at this from the semantic web perspective, is assuming that we have all this data, we don't right now, okay, can we draw inferences about invasive species, and what are the effects to this new environment? Okay. That's what we are trying to do. But the problem here, the issue here is again that of data. Who will report a Nile tilapia fish to be found in the California? Okay. So can we push this to the, you know, the wisdom of the crowds, so to speak? Can we push this down and see if we can leverage what people are already tagging and posting? And can we use this to in our project, in the Spire project? Which tracks invasive species is what we wanted to check. Okay, so what we did was, again, for this we just created some tools. I'm just putting this in there. This is still in a very early phase work. We just created some tools which just lets people to blog a little bit more structured, okay, so that we can capture, for instance, here an observer report seeing something, okay, in a specific lat and log. Okay, on the same lines. You can think of the same thing happening on Flickr. People tag on Flickr, right? People tag lat long as well on Flickr. Okay. People tag about some new, say something new that they found in their backyard. Right? They'll post it. So can we exploit? This is what we are seeing. This is still early results. But what we did was, so Spotter was that, and what we did was, using this tag content from Flickr as well as blog websites, we overlaid it on Maps. Okay. It was more of a mashup kind of thing where we put together a lot of things together to create a new tool which will let you see what do you see in your environment and is this invasive or not. So what we did in this entire project, and we are still doing, is to push the actual observation of invasive species to social media. Leverage it from social media, observing invasive species, so and social media. Okay. So the next thing that I'll talk about is internal corporate blogs, which will also be quick. Okay. So what I want to, so how many of you, very few blog, have blogged in the past? How many of you have seen blogs in your organizations internally, even though you haven't blogged? Not much. Okay. So a lot of these big institutes, IBM is what I'll talk for because this work was done while I was visiting them. But a lot of these big tech organizations have internal blogs right now, which lets employees blog their thoughts. Of course, not about what they did every day. They can do that as well. But most of them generally talk about what is interesting in technology. These employees act as filters for competitive intelligence, business intelligence, you name it, okay, when it comes to the outside world. Okay. So internal corporate blogs are one way of leveraging it, just as blogs are also considered as filters to the web. Okay. If you follow a subset of blogs, they are usually considered as filters to the web. Okay. Okay. So growth of blogs, this is a really, really outdated chart, but I'm just still having it now. Blogs as of now, I don't think are seeing much of a growth. When you look at blog attrition as well as, you know, new blogs being adopted, I don't think there is much of a growth. But when you look at external blogs, and over the past 4 or 5 years, blogs have seen tremendous growth. The number of people adopting blogs.
Is this also for blog entries as well as blogs?
This is just for new blogs, not entries, just blogs.
Okay.
This is the popular technology chart. How many of you know about technology?
Technology?
Blog searching, which is now going down though. But
yeah, that's what I'm wondering, because a lot of people got into the hype, and yes, they have blogs, but the activity on blogs has
But yeah, I mean, it's growing. So the reason I put this chart out there is, when it comes to blogs in the external world, there's a lot of analysis when it comes to blogs, conversations on blogs, and you name it. But when it comes to blogs within organizations, there is a lot of hype around a lot of things happening when it comes to blogs within organizations, which is internal, secure, private, to the organization. Nothing much is known about blogs within organizations. So what I'll in the next set of 10 slides, what I'll do is, I'll look at blogs within an organization. Why is this important? As I said, within Yahoo, there are around 5,000 people on Facebook. And for most of these younger generation who are actually on many of these tools, you want to empower these employees and give them new tools. to index something within the corporate interact. Okay? So blogs are one way of doing it, and we should encourage it. So this study, what I'm doing here is to see how has it been used now and what can we do with it. Okay, so these are the specific questions that I'll be trying to answer. What are the characteristics of these internal blogs? How are they growing? Who uses them? How would you quantify the nature of the conversations on this? And the other interesting thing is, does the VP blog, or is it just the employees at the leaf level who are blogging? When it comes to corporate hierarchy, who are the actual bloggers and what is the relationship between them? How do you exploit internal blogs? Again, for bottom-up competitive intelligence, there are different things that you can do when it comes to, you know, it could lead to a lot of other things too. Okay, so this is the way internal blogs look within IBM. Okay, this was work done when I was visiting IBM. Employees, or all employees, have an internal blog. You're talking about employees, 300,000 employees worldwide. Obviously not all of them blog, as I'll show in the next chart. But this is the way, just as you have external blogs, you have internal blogs within IBM. You can talk about absolutely anything. You know, I've talked about different things, about me going to a conference, about me going back to school in some time, you name it, okay? So and this is the way the landing page looks. So within IBM, the immediate incentive for many of the bloggers within IBM, so most of you don't blog because most of you think, I need to invest time on this and what do I get out of it? That's generally the biggest question many of you have. Okay. Within IBM, the biggest incentive for many of them is hot blogs. They want to get immediately on the hot blogs list for the day. Okay. They want to be one of the top bloggers within IBM for the day. You know, it's a big thing for them. Okay. As well as popular entries. They want to be a highly commented entry and so on. So these are the immediate incentives for many of the employees out there. And because of that, not many blog though, but still people do blog. Among 300,000 employees, there are around 4,000 active users. I'll tell you exactly what active users mean. But a very small chunk, 1% of the employee population actually blogs. Looking at it, you will think that, hey, that's really tiny. But these 1% that blog are highly influential employees within IBM. Even though they are at a lower level in the organization, they really have a really high influence within IBM because they are connectors within a lot of employees within IBM. So it's a highly influential bunch. Okay. So why do they blog? Means to initiate collaboration, protection of ownership to ideas. Okay. That's a big thing generally in organizations. When you blog, make a post, you are time stamping, saying this is my idea and this is what I have to say right now. Okay. Platform for leadership emergence, all this is being seen within IBM and it's being seen in a lot of other organizations that are adopting internal blogs. And so on, okay. Audience to discuss work practice as well as internal business intelligence. So just to give you, again, I use the same log likelihood measure, compare external blogs with internal blogs and see what are the indicative terms in external blogs as opposed to internal blogs. When you look at internal blogs, as you see, you know, terms like the organization, our current organization, as well as some of our competitors are discussed when it comes to internal blogs. Some of the software within the organization discussed, Lotus, WebSphere, customers are discussed, you know. Java and some really low-level Java and coding and things like that are also discussed. But when you look at external blogs, a lot of things are discussed too. But yeah, you see the difference, you know, internal blogs as opposed to external blogs and what is discussed and what is not discussed in each of these. So continuing with some background about this data set that we had itself, it was data from November 2003 to August 2006 within IBM, around 23,000 blogs from 300,000 employees, with around 48,000 posts and 48,000 comments. Okay, and when I was actually there, I was also a blogger within IBM, and the way I used to, because I didn't have an idea about what happened in the past 3 years, I actually got input from most of these employees through the blog. I used to make blog posts, ask why this happened and what happened during this time, during the internal blogosphere, got feedback from them. Okay. So this is how the geographical spread. IBM is again an organization which is spread around the globe. This is how the spread of bloggers look like. I think one of the questions was about geographical spread of bloggers itself. Within IBM, this is how it looks. You know, US continues to lead. 41.1% of the actual bloggers within IBM are from the US. There is a lot from lot of users from Japan, UK, and Canada, and the rest. So if you really look at it, this as well as the charts for the external bloggers here, as you know, David Sifri from Technorati usually just comes out with these charts every year. He used to rather. It's closely mirroring. Okay, US has a very high adoption of blogs, followed by Japan, China, you name it. Okay. So within the internal bloggers here, again, blogs double every 10 months. The number of new blogs double in terms of adoption. Posts usually double once in every 6 months. When it comes to many of these internal blogs, a typical question that comes to many of these employees is, why should I blog? And will my manager have an issue with it? Will he or she think that me blogging means I have too much time in my hands? Which was a big issue for many of these employees. Okay, so what really happened during the initial phase was when blogging was not at all getting traction within IBM. This was a big issue. Okay, and then when it really suddenly jumped, it was all because there was a top-down guidance from IBM saying you should blog. Okay, if you have anything to say, go blog. If your manager says something, talk to the manager about your manager. You name it, right? So there was a big push within IBM to encourage blogging among its employees, okay? Which really led to this adoption. Okay? Next, looking at the retention and the attrition. Retention and attrition is also something that I define retention as a user who is posted during a specific month is considered retained if he or she reposts at least once in the following 6 months. Okay, that's my. There is no standard definition, but this is the way we looked at retention. And if you look at retention, and if you look at attrition, so this is what I've plotted from 2003 to 2006: retention and attrition. This is when the blogging platform was initially initiated within IBM. Okay, as you see, there was a big. So initially, a lot of people tried out blogging. Okay, when the platform initially came out, a lot of people, but most of them were lost due to attrition during that time. Not so much so at the second point. This was again during the employment during the top-down guidance phase. If you see retention. After the employee top-down guidance, actually went above attrition when it comes to blogging within IBM, which really shows how the community as well as this top-down guidance really helped in terms of giving momentum to blogging within IBM, okay, which was really important. I won't talk about tag use distribution. I'll talk about linking behavior though. When you look at blog posts within IBM and try to understand what are users talking about. One of the things you saw was the log likelihood based measure. But you can also try to quantify it using hyperlinks, outlinks, going out from blog posts and seeing where do these outlinks go. Do they go within, are they inside the corporate intranet or are they going outside the corporate intranet? Okay. So 60% of the posts within IBM blogosphere actually featured outlinks. It was just 60%, out of which 40%, which is quite a high number, actually had something to do with the intranet, with the internal blogs, with the internal corporate network, okay? Internal things. 30% had featured external. So there were a combination of posts which featured both internal links as well as external links. Okay, there was a very small number which had links to other blogs within the. What usually happened within IBM was many of those in the external blogosphere, the way linking happens is that if you have a thought, you generally don't comment. You create a blog post because you want users to come to your blog, people to come to your blog, and then you link to the other blog. Okay? But when it comes to the internal blogosphere, what happened is most of the employees wanted to retain the conversation in the original author. In the blog of the original author. So what you see here is that only 10% of the links were actually to other blogs. Okay, most of them preferred to go to the other blog, comment, and come back instead of creating a blog post and then linking to the other blog. Okay, as opposed to the external blogosphere. Just a little bit of the network stats as well when it comes to the internal blogosphere. Again, you know, model it as a graph. I won't go into the details because everyone knows about this a little bit. 75 to 80% of the nodes were disconnected. We finally came up with around 4,000 nodes and 17,000 edges. And the nodes to node relationship is, of course, an author making a blog post, another author commenting on a blog post. You have an edge from this author to the other author. Okay. I won't talk about the degree distribution. So when you look at, again, when you look at this network, when you look at this graph, what you'll see is that there is a lot of conversations. Okay. What we did next was, among these edges, if the source of the edge and the destination of the edge, we looked at the country of these edges. Okay. Are they in the same geography or are they at a different geography? And we plotted them in a matrix style. As you see, the diagonal is all conversations intra-geography, US to US, Japan to Japan, UK to UK. As you see, it's quite high when it comes to, so the 41% of all the conversations in the internal blogosphere as post to comment were US to US. Okay.
What is the percentage of employees?
That's a good question. This chart does not reflect that. It does not. It just says, doesn't matter.
So you have to normalize it, right?
Yeah, I have to normalize it. This plot does not normalize it. It's a good question. So that's the diagonal. That's what the diagonal shows. And if you look at the other parts, what I also want you to see is that in the English-speaking blogosphere, which includes UK and Canada, okay, you see a lot of cross-geography conversations. There is a lot from UK to US, UK, right, 7.4, 8.9, and UK to UK is 8.0. So what you see is that there is a lot of conversations happening across UK to US, as well as with Canada, okay? But what I also want you to see is that when it comes to Japan, there was a lot of intra-geography conversations, 4.3, but when it looked at conversations going outside or into Japan, it was very low, mainly because of language barriers. So this specific thing shows that, you know, language barriers continue to be a big hindrance when it comes to conversations in social media as well as blogs in the internal corporate blogosphere. So motivated by this too, as to an extent, a lot of Japanese as well as English bloggers, you know, really were pushing towards ways of, you know, doing cross, trying to learn Japanese or Japanese trying to learn English. You know, this was used as a motivation to an extent. Again, just to look at conversations and how effective they are for information diffusion, what we did was, you know, standard way, we just did an all pair shortest path on this graph, ranked edges by centrality, how important they are for conversations, okay, and plotted the ratio of inter-geography conversations, the top x edges. For instance, here, in the top, say 200 edges, in the top 200 edges, yeah, around 0.65 of the edges were cross-geography, okay, when it comes to information diffusion. So what this really hints is that we really need to, in some way, encourage these cross-geography conversations. If you really want information diffusion among employees in an organization which is 300,000 strong. Okay. Of course, as you go further lower, top 100, you see that it's even higher. The next thing that I'll quickly talk about is general reach and spread when it comes to conversations and how it actually maps to the employee hierarchy itself. This shows an employee hierarchy here, and this is a post person making a blog post, and these are people making comments on this blog post. Just look at the spread of this conversation for this blog post and these conversations. We consider spread as anything which is part of, you know, the number of edges in the tree, going from P to C is 3, right? Number of edges in the tree going from P to C is 5 here. Number of edges going in the tree from P to C is 6 here. So we look at conversations and the spread of the conversations as you know, the size of the tree divided by the number of people commenting. Okay, for instance, spread here is 8 by 3, considering this subtree. Reach is more of an addition of all the three of them. Okay, 3 plus 5 plus 6. But just look at spread, which is a subtree constituted or created by this conversation, okay, in the employee hierarchy. Just to give you an idea of what spread is, if you look at just conversations between an employee and a manager, the spread is 1, because it's just one edge between an employee and a manager. Okay, so just look at again the red chart here. Spread, as you see it, when you plot it against all the conversations happening on the internal blogosphere, peaks at around 4, 5, or 6, somewhere there. And what this really shows is that there is a lot of intra-department conversations to say. So closer proximity you are in the organization, it generally means that there are more conversations happening. Okay. So this finally, what you can do with reach and spread and other metrics when it comes to conversation in the blogosphere is, again, even in the internal blogosphere, there are issues with how do you rank blogs. When there are many posts coming in every day, how do you say which are the top posts in the internal blogosphere, and how do we rank them? Okay. We use many of these metrics, like the spread of blog posts, to actually quantify, saying, is this post popular or not? Okay. We used it for meme tracking to say what are the popular posts. We used it for trend identification to figure out tags for this post, and what does this mean? What are the emerging trends in IBM? For instance, IBM really got into Second Life during one period of, how many of you know about Second Life? During some period of time. So Second Life really emerged out during this trend identification phase, and when we are doing this here, okay? We also used it for finding experts on specific domains. Now it's very important that we find the right experts within IBM who are willing to share their thoughts. And usually bloggers who blog are also willing to share their thoughts, okay, when it comes to certain expertise. Okay. So finally, the last thing that I'll touch on is that spam in blogs itself and social media in general. Okay, I'll just have 2 or 3 slides on it. How many of you have actually done some analysis on blogs? Have you come across, when you are looking at corpus of blogs, have you come across spam as an issue? What kind of corpus have you worked out? Blogs.
Oh, what kind of blogs?
Yeah.
Spam.
Where did you get your data from?
I haven't worked out the blogs. When someone sent me a data file, I looked at what the blog is.
Okay. But generally, when it comes
to
spam, okay.
Yeah.
Generally, when it comes to blogs, spam is a really, really good problem. Okay. So, spam in blogs and social media in general was itself my PhD work when I actually. So I won't go into the details. Just 3 or 4 slides. Okay. Is a huge problem. Spam, as Raghu pointed out yesterday as well, in most of these tools on the web, is a huge, huge problem. Okay. So what is spam? Generally, when you think of spam in email. But what I'm pointing to here is that spam extends well beyond email. Okay. So the way we look at it is it's capturing user attention unjustifiably in any internet-enabled application, email, web, social media, etc. Okay. So what do I mean by anything beyond that? This is a specific spam blog. It means absolutely nothing. Auto-generated posts. You know, it's all machine-generated content. And when you are trying to analyze the blogosphere, for instance, doing something like buzz analysis, trend analysis, all these make a huge difference, okay? And how this specific blog was created just to host advertisements, okay? And it also has link farms and you name it, okay? So the point here that I'm making is that it's a huge problem. Around 50% of the index blogosphere, if you don't do cleaning, if you don't remove noise, is spam blogs. It's a huge, huge problem. So that's one problem of social media. And has anyone come across my blog log, which was one of the tools which just looks at readership around blogs and you name it. For instance, you know, I am on my blog log, and these were recent readers for our blog. Okay, and it turns out that Carmen Electra also reads our blog, which is pretty cool. And we also have a lot of spam when it comes to that's my profile, and I have a lot of admirers. You name it, you see a lot of spam here as well. Okay. So what I'm pointing to here is that even in a lot of these community-based applications, there is quite a lot of spam. And when we look at spam right now, we look mainly at email spam. We, to a small extent, are looking at web spam now. Web spam is a huge problem as well. And there is this community-oriented spam as well. So what I'm saying is that there are two forms of spam now, the way we look at internet spam. Direct spam, email spam is what we are really aware of. There is also this large body or problem of indirect spam, which is, you know, spam blogs, general web spam, and so on. And most of the social media spam comes in between the two, mainly because most of these social media websites are also indexed by search engines. So most of them have to do a lot of spam detection locally within their community, but when it comes to web search engines, they need to do a spam detection globally as well. I won't go into the details of this stuff. And this is what this slide says. So finally, just to conclude, we have worked on a number of projects which really try to exploit the true value of social media. Okay. Just try to mine for some new insights and see what we can gain out of these new insights. Okay. So what I'm saying is that there are a lot of interesting challenges. We have explored many of them.
Just a quick question. When you say mine for a new insight, you have to have an idea of what an insight is before you mine for it.
Yeah.
So how do you form those insights?
Yeah, usually most of our ideas on what the insights are based on, first of all, studying what people are looking for on social media, following a lot of news stories about what these new trends are when it comes to social media, what users are looking for.
So it's done by human initiative.
Done by human initiative. For us, we have many, many people in the industry who are looking at social media and trying to identify what they really need to do from social media. That's our input as well. Again, the reason I bring about even TechMeme and other websites is, if you really want to see what these insights could be on social media, follow a couple of these websites. They really talk about what's big out there when it comes to social content, what we can do with it. Okay. Finally, I mentioned engage many times when it comes to social media. Let's engage, and you know, I use some of those terms, text me and Lowell. That's about it. If you have any questions, just talk to me. Send me an email. When it comes to general domain idea of social media, data set, you name it, I can give you a lot of input when it generally comes to social media and a lot of domain knowledge about social media. If you have any other questions about technical details of the papers, talk to me as well. That's my current email ID, and I'll be more than happy to, you know, just point you in the right direction. And just to add a final plug, ICWSM has its conference this next year as well. It's in Seattle in March. And this is a very nice venue if you want to really get an idea of what is happening in the general social media space from the computer science perspective too. This is a very large, around, I think, social ICWSM in 2007, during its first year, had 150 attendees. We're expecting around 250 attendees this year. Okay, I'm one of the persons in the organizing team as well. And this has a very interesting mix of people from academia and from startups. A lot of startups who are working on social media and who are really looking at new insights when it comes to social media. So it's a very good venue to go to, and it's in Seattle. And I believe the deadline for submitting papers there is December 10th or something like that. It's a great venue.
What's the name of the venue again?
ICWSM.
What's that stand for?
International Conference on Weblogs and Social Media. Thank you.